So good morning, everybody. We're very lucky to be able to go through the sugya of Zohar Alein a little bit together. Obviously, you know, there's a lot more beyond that I'm going to talk about, but hopefully to give a basic background of what some of the Mefarshim discuss and how they view this sugya a little bit. So back in the Mishnah on Daf Ayin Hayam and Beis, we talked about cases of Davar Ha'aved, and we said Zohar Ha'chamar V'Ha'kadar La'aviv Breibrin, V'Chalilin L'kala L'meitu Polin L'haus V'Shanam V'Meshra, you know, 2/3 cases where there was going to be something that if you delayed in doing it, there was going to be an additional loss to the balabayas. The chol davar she'aved, and anything that would cause such a loss, the chazru bahen, and after the agreement, okay, and it's implied from here, according to many of the Rishonim, specifically we quote in the name of the Ravid, and we see it in the Rush and other places, that even as soon as they accept the job, if they back out, makom she'ein sham adam, if there's no one else around at an easy, equal rate, that he could have gotten, again, new workers to replace the old workers at their same rate, then you have two choices. Socher alein om matan. You can either hire workers using their money, or you can trick them to return. Okay, that's basically the way it is. This is all going to be discussed in our sugya over here as to sort of what are the parameters of socher alein. Note that Zohar Alein may not be something that's immediately applicable. You may have to first try to be mata them. That's not something which we're going to be covering today. But simply, what does it mean to be Zohar Alein, to hire others at their cost? What are the limits of this? Why can you do so? And when can you do so? So, says the Gemara on Ayin Ches Amud Aleph, Zohar Es HaChamar Ves HaKadar, Zohar Alein Omatan. It quotes the Mishnah. It says, Ad Kama Zohar Alein. Until what amount, meaning, what amount of money can you use of the original employees, of the original workers, towards hiring new workers? How much money can you take? Amar Rav Nachman says, Ad kidei sicharan. He says, well, you're allowed to take up to their wages. Now, this is going to be a source of debate amongst the Rishonim. So let's start over there. We'll get back to the other parts of the Gemara in a little bit. So, Rashi is of the opinion, he understands this means the employer can take any money that's owed to the worker for work already completed and use it towards hiring others. This applies only if they have not been paid yet. And therefore, it seems if they've already received the money, the employer has no recourse. He has no way of trying to hire new workers using money. Why? Because they already got the money. Rashi says it's money that is owing, physically owing, to the original workers that the balabayas is still in possession of. That's money that is considered kidei scharan. That is their wages, literally, wages that are owed, and those may be used to hire new workers. So, for example, if the workers were working for $8 a day, and they worked a quarter of the day, and the balabayas has not paid them yet, he may take those $2 that were owed to the first set of workers and say, I'm going to add this on to the wage of the second set of workers so I can find workers to complete my job before, again, something bad happens because we're in a case of Davar Ha'aved. Okay. Now, this would be important because let's say you had a case where most of the work was completed already. If let's say you had already completed 3/4 of the day at $8 per day, he'd be allowed to take $6 that are owed to those workers, again, provided he didn't pay them, and add that amount of money on to the final part of the day. We don't see really anybody who explicitly goes out of their way amongst the other Rishonim to agree with Rashi on this. There is a discussion of certain of the Shitos, which we'll get to a little bit later. Rashi is opposed by Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam cited in the Ritva, as well as the Ravid cited in Shita, as well as the Rosh. They disagree with Rashi and they say no. What it means is, kidei scharan means kefel scharan. It means double the amount of money that they would have been paid. So what they understand is to mean you can take the amount of money that would have been owed to the worker for the full job and use it towards hiring others, irrespective of whether or not they have been paid yet and not contingent on the amount of work completed. Okay, so you just simply take double their wages, you can give that away. This is equivalent to saying the employer may hire other workers for twice the original amount. Okay, now, we're going to discuss that there are two ways in which this opinion could be understood. It can be illustrated at looking at a case where half of the work was already completed. In the case where, again, $8 per day, half the work is completed. One could argue that the employer could offer double the wages of the full job, according to this view, which would mean the full job was worth 8, was a whole day's worth of work. So can you take that full 8 of the original workers and offer that on top of the 4 that would be fitting to these workers? Or would we say that no, you can only offer double the salary that is due, would be due to the first workers for that specific amount of time? Namely, if they were halfway done the day, you couldn't take 8 from the first workers, you could only take 4 from the first workers, meaning you'd pay double for the second half of the day. If this was an even smaller amount of the day, if there was 1 minute left in the day, again, according to one way of understanding this, you could take the entire day's wages of the first workers and add it on to this last minute of work. Again, if that was a case of Davar HaAved. According to the other way of understanding this, you could only double the pay for that 1 minute of work. It's unclear exactly the way this is. Based on the language of Rabbeinu Tam that's cited in Ritva, you could make an argument that we follow the first understanding, namely, that you could offer double the wages of the full job, meaning the original, the entire full salary of the first workers that they would have received for the entire day. It seems, and I didn't get a chance to look at this at length, but it seems that the Sma, as well as in the Drishan Prisha, which are his own commentaries, he seems to understand this as well, based on a svara that he gives, which we're not going to get into right now. However, what I think the accepted interpretation seems to be, if you look, for example, at Tiver Shmuel, which is one of the commentaries on the Rosh, is that the latter understanding is correct, which... the reason why I think that is... depends how much we need to take away from them. I mean, if,
so
for example...
if you took that for half the day, the $4...
then they would get nothing, correct.
They're going to get nothing.
They're going to get absolutely nothing, and possibly... they can even lose money, right? According to Rabbeinu Tam, let's say they worked for 5 minutes, right? Worked for 5 minutes of the day. So now basically $7.90, right, are owing to, would be paid for the rest of the day. And now we have to get those workers back for the second half. If you were doubling it, doubling their $7.90 that was remaining, you'd come up with
$15.80.
You'd come up with $15.80, and the $15.80, you'd be able to take $7.90 back from the first workers who worked for 1 minute. Right? They'd be losing a ton of money,
right,
according to Rabbeinu Tam. Right? So you can have cases where you're losing as the first workers, where according to Rashi, no, it's only unpaid work. They're never going to actually be paying out of pocket. And in fact, once they've received their wages, you can't even go back and do that anymore.
Ask one annoying question.
Sure.
According to the first interpretation, let's say it's called the Sma, is it double? It seems to be...
that's exactly why I was going to say. I think that everybody assumes... No, you're 100% right. The reason why I think everybody assumes that it's the second approach is because it's not really double of anything. It's not double of the work that was already completed. Really? It's not really double of the work that has yet to be completed. It's really not a double. It's really the full wages. Now, could you read that into certain things? You could read that into certain things. But if you're going to say it's called double, it's very hard to reconcile that sheet. And I believe that that's the reason why most Mefarshim seem to assume that that is not the case. Note that...
this is a knas on the first set. What is this?
So this is a fair question. This kedei scharan, well, according to Rashi, it's not a knas. It seems to be a readjustment of how you're paying your wages. It could be that it's a knas, but it more seems to be that, listen, if now I need that money to finish my job, then, you know, your work became worth a lot less. There's as far as some people have said that, or Soloveitchik suggested that way.
Essentially, the Rav explained that, so you hired the workers, let's say $10 the entire job, okay? Mm-hmm. They didn't have to work. It's unclear how you evaluate the value of what they've done already. Mm-hmm. You could say, oh, well, we'll go by the original agreement. You could also say, we'll go by what it's worth now on the market.
Mm-hmm.
So Salvage essentially says, well, look, now you need to pay, let's say, $8 for the second half of the job. So one way of evaluating how much their work was worth to you was that it's worth $2 because I needed $8 the rest of the job. I was willing to pay $10, essentially. I'll pay you $2 for your part of the job because that's how much it was worth to me. You got $2 worth of it done. Mm-hmm. So it's not that you're really penalizing them. You're not penalizing them. You're saying this is how much I owe you for what you helped me.
But they did work.
Yeah, but how much is that work worth?
Right. Well, I mean, if you think of it in a different frame, in a different frame, even in a case of Darasha Eino Avid, which we'll get to in a second, what do? We adjust the wages of the first workers based on how much it will cost to complete the job.
Right.
Okay, right, and I think that that's really, we can say that even different, slightly different from Soloveitchik, that there's a certain amount of money the Balabais has set aside for this job. If now that is owing because of the actions of these workers to someone else, so it's owing to other people. That's not taking away money from them per se. Other people do look at it as a knas because they cost him or may cost him something later on. But yeah, there's a few.
The Ritva says it's not.
Yeah. Right, correct. The Ritva says it's not. Yes, the Ritva says, I mean, there's a whole discussion, many, many Rishonim, as to whether or not you'd actually have to, what happened if you couldn't find workers altogether? Would you end up having to pay? That's a discussion, again, not for now, but certainly relevant in terms of understanding the logic here. Okay. Now, the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam, just if you want some sources, seems to be followed by the Ritva, the Ravid, the Meiri, Talmud Rajba, also seems to be the opinion of Ramban, Chuvas HaGaonim, and HaGaos Maimonios.
Well, which interpretation?
The simple interpretation, again, as we said, the latter interpretation to say that it's double the amount. Rosh cites both opinions, seems to support the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam, and the Mefarshei HaRosh, including the Kitzur Pesach HaRosh, which is the tour, understand the Rosh to be supporting Rabbeinu Tam, even though he also cites Rashi there. Now, the Rambam is a bit of a mess. The Rambam's language, you guys have it on there?
Yeah.
Okay, you can take a look at it there. Anybody want to read it out? You already have it in front of you. I can pull it up if you want. I don't need to read it. What does he say by Davar HaAved?
Ketzat socher alehem, socher poalim acherim, v'gomrim melachtam shel oto oved. V'kol sheyosif le'elu poalim acherim al ma shepasak l'rishonim, notel min harishonim. Ad kama? Ad kidei scharan shel rishonim.
Okay, so the Rambam only uses the language ad kidei scharan shel rishonim. He does identify for us that it's the first people's money, but again, that doesn't really prove anything. It's hard to know exactly what he means, but he does say notel. Okay, that's an important point, which is okay. So let's begin from the discussion that we have here. Magid Mishnah on the spot quotes Rashi, leading Lecha Mishnah to understand that according to the Magid Mishnah, their opinions are actually the same somehow, but leaving off saying that it's very hard for him to understand how that would be. The Beis Yosef actually, shockingly, understands Rashi as being equivalent to Rabbeinu Tam, and then writes that Rambam and Ramban agree, but that's really meaningless because, again, we don't know who he's saying they actually agree with because he learns Rashi in a wildly different way than anybody else, with one possible exception and defense, but really, if you want to see a thorough critique, you can see the Drisha in Choshen Mishpat there, 333.3, where he really takes the Beis Yosef to task for this reading of Rashi. And it's, again, it's really altogether rejected. So we don't have any evidence from the Beis Yosef. The Lecha Mishnah, again, is unclear. The Magid Mishnah says, quotes Rashi there, but it doesn't mean anything. Rav Soloveitchik understands Rambam to be following Rashi. That is a bit of an issue, specifically because he says no tail. Rashi, as we said earlier, says he can't take back from the workers. So it's possible that Rambam, according to Rav Soloveitchik, agrees with Rashi in terms of what kidei scharan means, meaning how much was actually owing. But nevertheless, he says you're actually allowed to take money back. Okay, so that could be a modified middle ground shita. It could be that he agrees with Rashi altogether, but that would be hard for me to understand.
I mean, Rashi himself is the book, Hiblu, which implies that if they had taken, he would be able to extract. But it's impossible because Rashi didn't say that.
Not according to almost all Rishonim that learn Rashi, meaning the Rosh, for example, says it explicitly. A number of sources. It would be very hard to learn that way in Rashi. Despite the fact that it seems like only a diok, okay, no, it's pretty significant. If you also see that Meiri understands the Rambam in that he's allowed to take it back, but doesn't define, according to Rambam, whether he would hold like Rabbeinu Tam or Rashi. What is interesting is that you have the Drisha and the Mar HaPanim on the Yerushalmi Bava Metzia 6.1. They both understand the Rambam to be following the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam. And they note that why did the Magid Mishnah bring Rashi then? Why did he cite Rashi's opinion when he's quoting the Rambam? It's just to show you that there's someone who argues. Not because he holds that it's the same thing, but a different thing. There are other Rishonim also that use ambiguous language that you can't know. Classically the Smag, but no one really cares about the Smag these days. For some odd reason, historically the Smag has just been dropped. Okay, now, if we're going to say And the Ritva asked this question. According to Rashi, there would seemingly be no difference between cases where a monetary loss will occur if the job is not completed in a time-sensitive manner and cases where the employer will incur no loss. Meaning, Davar HaAvid and Davar She'ino HaAvid, what is the difference between them? Because according to Rashi, the employer can only take what he owes to the workers and give it to the other workers, but can never extract any money. That would be the case as well. If new workers were to cost more money in a case of Davar She'ino HaAvid, then you would actually not pay them anything. So how, according to Rashi, might there be a difference? Or you're just, oh, you're not raising your hand, you're just stretching. Okay, so there are a number of answers to the question. So serving the parents.
Is over Ovid if it's going to cost me more?
No, it's a case of Davar She'eino HaAvid. Davar HaAvid is when there will be an additional time-based loss. If you don't get the job completed now, there will be additional loss to the Baal HaBayis.
Only half the work has been done. In order to complete that, it's going to cost me more. So I've lost.
No. That's what we consider Davar She'eino HaAvid. If Poalim back out on a case where there's not going to be additional loss to the Baal HaBayis based on the fact that it's not being completed now, meaning it can wait, right? So long as there's not additional loss, that's the key of what Davar HaAvid is. It's something we discussed a little bit earlier in the year.
For example, if you have people who are, need to pick your apples from the tree, and if they don't do it now, it'll spoil.
Right.
That would be Davar HaAvid because you're going to lose out on your produce. But if you just want them to mow your lawn, and that could just wait till tomorrow, that's Davar She'eino HaAvid, even if they'll cost more.
Right? Oh. We just consider that. Hokru Poalim, which there is a work in, which there is a ruling in place, back in the Mishnah, and we talked about it at length elsewhere, that you can actually compensate by giving some of the wages that were owed to the first workers, to the second workers, and they only take based on how much it will cost to complete the job. Okay, that we saw in the Bryce, that we saw in, etc. So, if that's the case according to Rashi, both cases are essentially equivalent. Obviously, according to Rabbeinu Tam, there's a significant difference in that, again, you may be able to extract money from the workers in the case of Davar HaAvid, as we mentioned. So, there are a number of answers. Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz, who asked this, Maram Shif, both suggest that then when there's no immediate monetary loss, when it's Davar She'eino HaAvid, the employer has to search or wait for cheaper workers to be available. This comes up also in other discussions of other Rishonim in a slightly different context, but the Rajba says this, others. The Drisha actually makes a very interesting point here, which seems pashut, to say that the difference here is only when the employer was in possession of the tools of the worker, which is something we'll speak about afterwards. When the case of Kishabas Chavila Biyado, he says, in the case where Einba Chavila Liyado, there doesn't have to be a difference. There can be a difference in a case that we're going to discuss later on, of Bas Chavila Biyado. It's an interesting idea. I didn't see other people say it. Osam Farshi Talmud brings a few other sources that the difference would be in regards to a Schir Yom, okay, or basically in the case of a non-Davar HaAvid, the Schir Yom would receive their wages according to the original stipulation, where in the case of an impending loss, meaning by a Davar HaAvid, they wouldn't receive any wages, right? Because a Schir Yom, as we said, a Poel, quote-unquote, in the case of Davar She'eino HaAvid, will be paid based on the work that he has already done. Therefore, that would be the difference, according to Rashi, only for a Schir Yom and not for a Kablan. Also a very straightforward teretz. Rabbi Yashiv has another teretz. We don't need to go through all these things now. Okay.
Could the difference just be, just quickly, I mean, this is really what the... that there is a difference, but in terms of how much, like, practically the weight, the value, or the rate will be? Meaning in a case of...
So you're saying it will end up being more in the case of Davar HaAvid. Yeah, I'm not sure that's enough to say that it's a difference. Meaning, because then if we just said the case of Davar HaEino HaAvid, we'd be able to extrapolate to Davar HaAvid, and the ruling would be the same. It's hard to know. He does... Rabbi Yashiv kind of talks about that a little bit, which is the one I was going to mention, as to whether or not you could spend more than the market rate.
Right.
That's the way he tends to frame it, and therefore, in the cases of Davar She'eino HaAvid, you can never spend more than market rate, but in the case of Davar HaAvid, you can spend more than market rate if that's what required.
Right.
That's as close to what you're saying, basically. Right. Essentially what you're saying. Okay. The Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi is a bit of a mess also. It's hard to understand. Not like it's a bit of a mess in terms of Chas V'Shalom say the Yerushalmi is a mess, but I'm saying it's hard. There's a lot of discussion amongst the commentaries as to how to interpret the Yerushalmi. Rush actually brings a raya from the Yerushalmi. Okay, and do you have the Yerushalmi on the sheets or no? No. Okay, you don't have the Yerushalmi. Fine. The Yerushalmi is basically says, if you look in the Rush, okay, you'll see this language as well if you want to open up to the back of your Gemaras. The Rush by us, 6-6. Okay. Sorry, I'm not sure how I got into the Marsha there. Here we are. Vav. Okay, here we are. Says the Rashi, it's on, quotes the Yerushalmi, Okay, and he says, V'chein mashram b'Yerushalmi, this is on page Ayin Beis in the Oz V'Hadar, for those of you who have it, Dafayin Pesam Adalef, Sochar Leina Matan, which again is in 6.6. And he says, V'chein mashram b'Yerushalmi, T'gamar v'davar aved, Ketzad, Omer lahen, Sela katzatzi lachem bo utlushtaim. He says, how do you do mata'an? You tell them, ah, oh, I agreed originally for one sela, I'll give you two. O notel mizeh v'nosein lazeh. He says, or you can take from this one and give it to that one. What does that sound like to you? If you're saying the whole, what?
Like Rashi.
So it's interesting. I would say it sounds like Rabbeinu Tam.
Yeah.
Right? Because he's saying you're allowed to take away money from the first workers and give it to the other workers. Meaning, you're taking the one sela that you paid the original workers and you're giving it to the other workers, doubling their amount. And he brings this as a raya against Rashi.
Well, it seems like, at least in as much as you can take it away from them, but it might be more like the Rambam.
Correct. So if you were to interpret the Rambam like Rashi, it would be hard to say. The Mefarshim on the Rush, I believe, also talk about the possible diak of taking a sela and giving it to the other one. It sounds like it's the full wages, but you can debate that. I don't disagree with you. The point is that he brings his array against him. There is, I think, an attempt to answer by the Papula Harifta, which is, Lani Ustati, extremely, extremely hard to understand. What I believe he says, I'm just going quickly here, I'm not going to read it inside, but he says, if no work was performed by the original workers, he can actually then take the full amount away from them, but the second they start doing any work whatsoever, he's only allowed to take, which again is impossible to read into Rashi the way the Rishonim understand him. And you know, I understand the value in trying to answer this, but it doesn't really end up working out. Following that sentence, we have another sentence of Yerushalmi, but from Rav Ila, which is hard to understand. There are basically three ways to understand the Yerushalmi. That basically it says, and I'm reading a translation here, I don't have the original. Rav Ila says that they may hire others up to their wages, right, ad scharan. Asks the Gemara, ad chidun, up to that amount? So much? So the Gemara answers, no. It's rather up to their wages, liyoma, for that day, or up to their wages, lishah, for that amount of time, for that hour. The question is, what does it mean when it says up to their wages? That can't be, no. It's only up to their wages for a day, or up to their wages for an hour. If you look at the Mefarshim, the Yedid Nefesh, which is a later parish, there basically says, this is just like a practical way of understanding the Gemara. He says, yeah, you can't go ahead and offer out all the money that you have. Like, if you're supposed to pay them $100, don't go and offer $100 for the next minute. You should first begin by offering a smaller amount. Offer them what would be, you know, try to find workers for 1 hour. Try to find work for a day. Don't need to offer the whole 3-month contract salary that you had for the first workers, meaning don't just needlessly spend the money. Start off lower. Pnei Moshe, and reinforce in Mar HaPanim, which is his other commentary, understands that this Gemara is supporting the opinion of Rashi. You can really go up to the full amount that you hired them for? No! You can only go for the smaller amounts, meaning those which you owe the worker but have not yet paid them for. The Ridbaz, on the other hand, understands this as a question within Rabbeinu Tam, to say certainly it's permitted to spend double the amount, but the question is, can you spend double the amount only of the amount of time that remains or for the entire day, which was our question that we had in Rabbeinu Tam earlier. Let's stop here. Okay. The language used, there's a whole discussion of language and that in other places, ad kidei, whatever it is, can be double. It's not really relevant. Okay. Let's go back to the Gemara now. Okay. If we return to the Gemara back on Ayin Ches, we get to continue the Gemara. So up until now, the Gemara said very simply that Socher Lein, you're allowed to Socher Ad Kedei Scharan, which, again, we understood this machlokas. Espe Rava la Rav Nachman, Rava asks a question on Rav Nachman, who had stated that it's Ad Kedei Scharan. It says, Ay, Ad Arbayim V'chamishim Zuz. But if you looked earlier in some versions of the Tosefta, but in the Brisa, which is quoting the Tosefta that we have on Ayin Vav, it says explicitly, how much are you allowed to be Socher Aleihem? Ad Arbayim V'chamishim Zuz. Until 40 or 50 zuz. So how can you disagree with a braisa? Asks Rava. So Rav Nachman answers him, Amar leki tanya hisha basa chavila liyado, or bas chavila liyado. That's only in the case where the package came to your hand. What exactly this is, we'll discuss. I first want to discuss the idea of arbayim v'chamishim zuz. What does arbayim v'chamishim zuz mean? If I were to tell you, you can give the people 40 or 50 bucks, how would you understand that, just if I were to tell you that phrase? You don't really know what that means. Now, is it a precise measurement?
Probably
not. Yeah. Not. It's definitely not a precise measurement.
40 to 50 is
right. 40 to 50. I mean, like that's definitely not the same thing. I will note. It seems that in one gears of the tour, somebody I saw it was in square brackets. Someone took out Arba'im O, but I don't think that that's real. I think that that's just like someone skipped it out and attempted to say ad chamishin. Number one, again, it can't be exact because it offers two different monetary values, which are significantly different from each other, right? And remembering that in the Gemara, people were being hired out for how many zuz? 3 zuz, 4 zuz, 5 zuz, right? I mean, and that's something to keep in mind. So, Nimuke Yosef, Ran, Ramban, they all say this amount is used to show what employers would pay to avoid incurring a loss. Meaning it would be normal for employers to pay up to 40 or 50 zuz in a regular case in order to avoid having a loss happen. And therefore, this ruling, if we were to apply it nowadays, would mean whatever it would be considered normal, right? Whatever people, right? Spatla daito eitel kaladam. So you'd look at kaladam and you'd say whatever people would be willing to pay to avoid a loss, even if it would be 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times the schar that would normally be paid, that is considered an appropriate amount to pay. However, Meiri, following the Rambam Magid Mishnah, as explained by the Prisha, as well as the Ritva states this explicitly. The anonymous Shita in Shita Mikubetza states this explicitly. The Maharal says this in Tosfos, which we'll get to in a little bit. A ton of Rishonim, basically, all seem to understand that this just means however much you want. Unlimited. Obviously, this would be limited to the amount of money that you have in the Chavila, okay, if that were to be the case. And this will come up more in the discussion that we'll get to in a little bit, but meaning it's really just a way of saying however much you want, right? The way the Rama puts it is, you know, you give 40 or 50 to each one that would normally be getting 3, like every single day for each worker. Like, basically trying to say it's a very, very high amount, but there are, again, as we said, Ritva and the Shita and Shita Mikubetzes both say explicitly you can use the full value of the Chavila even if it's much greater than 50 zuz, and they go to war against the other opinion, the Shita. The Shita Sav, again, as we said, the Ran, the Ramban, and Muke Yosef, who say that it's about like what you pay for hiring, and they're like, we don't get that. We will explain their questions within the context of how they understand the idea of Bas Chavila Liado. So, let's begin by, let's talk about Bas Chavila Liado a little bit. Again, Arba Mechamishim Zuz, to summarize, can mean either an infinite amount of money or how much people would normally pay in cases of this. I'm not aware of anybody that actually significantly says it actually means you have to calculate the amount of 40 or 50 zuz and that's how much you can pay them. I mean, you'd have to know what Shmalacha was. The Rajba makes a lot of these arguments in his commentary, although it's unclear how he concludes. Okay, getting back to Bas Chavila Liado, if we take a look here at Tosfos. Tosfos will be our introduction. We'll get to Rashi later. Tosfos ask a very simple question. They say, obviously, you can pay Arba'im V'chamishim Zuz in the case of Bas Chavila Liado. And the question on Tosfos is it really so obvious? Why is it obvious that I can take someone else's money and use it to hire someone else? I mean, that doesn't seem very obvious to me. So with that, we can take a look, and you can take a look in Tosfos Harash, Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz, which parallel Tosfos, and they say explicitly the statement that the worker specifically handed over a mashkon, what we know as a collateral, saying, we will do our work. If we don't do our work, here, use this. This will guarantee that we do our work, and if not, so to say, this is like yours, almost. Again, this could be used to hire new workers in the case where the original workers backed out. But in order to properly explain what Tosfos' opinion may be here, and how this mashkon may work, we have to go to a longer sogya of mashkon, mane inkan, mashkon inkan in the Gemara and Kiddushin, daf ches, amud aleph, flipping over to amud beis. So, here's our...
I have a question, sorry. Yes. If it's collateral, could you say that the balabite keeps the rest of the chavila?
No. According to... It doesn't seem to be the case. If you're going to say it's literally collateral to make sure they work... you might be able to say that, but the Gemara, what it comes to be saying here is that you can only use it to hire workers, meaning the collateral should only be worth as much as the collateral is to make sure that the job gets done. It's hard to say that you wouldn't have to return the rest. again, in the event that you had to spend the full amount of it, then that would be allowed, according to those opinions, it seems. So the question as to how the mashkon works here and whether or not it'll be effective, let's take a look. That's a sugya in Kiddushin. And the truth is, based on the different cheetos there, you'll be able to see maybe if the person would be able to keep it would be potentially a kinyan. So the Gemara there tells us, the Rava tells in the name of Nachman, that if someone is Mekadesh and Isha and offered to pay her one money, but again, he says it's a loan for one, not a loan for one money, but I don't have it with me right now. I'm going to pay you one money in the future. And in order to show that, he gives her a mashkon alongside it. She's not considered mikudeshes. Why? Says the Gemara, mana ein kan, mashkon ein kan, neither the mana nor the mashkon is considered effective. Okay, it's clear why the mana is not effective, because he didn't give her the mana. He didn't give her that amount of money. Why is the mashkon not effective? I mean, he physically handed her an object, which is potentially hers to keep, if he doesn't pay her the money. So why is it considered to be not mikudeshes in that case? So there are two major shitos amongst the Rishonim. There may be slight modifications of them, which we'll discuss. But if you look in the sugyas there, Ravid, which is cited by Ritva there, and you can see other Mefarshim as well, cited, I think the Ran also cites it, explains that when a regular monetary loan is already in existence, then a mashkon is effective, since it can actively serve to guarantee that the loan already in place will be paid back. However, if the mashkon was given over before the loan, meaning when there was no loan in place, or there was no halachically valid, agreed upon, and kinyaned loan that was already in place, then giving over a mashkon is really irrelevant. There's nothing for it that it can have a shibud on. So in this case, where the guy says, I owe you $100 and here's a mashkon, there's no connection between the mashkon and the loan, because there was no actual loan already in place that they made a kinyan on that the mashkon could be chal on. That's the way that the Ravid explains it. He adds, by the way, that were there to be a mashkon that was explicitly associated with the debt by halachic acquisition, meaning if you were to say, bikona this mashkon to be associated with the debt, he says that actually could be presented as kedushin, it would be ineffective. That's not agreed upon entirely by the others, but again, Ritva, Ran, both, it's cited by the Ran as well. It seems that the Ran, certainly the Ritva, agrees with it. The Meiri has a slight variation of this view, which seems to be the view of the Rosh. But basically, they're all about when did this mashkon happen and what was it related to. If it happened after there was already a pre-existing halachically valid loan in place, then yes. If it did not, then no. And therefore here, when you're just saying something, I'm going to give you $100, here's a mashkon, that is irrelevant, it doesn't work. Now, the Ritva, therefore, getting back to our case, the Ritva writes, in our sogya, on, again, Ayin Chasam Adal, Tiberi Masla Kishabas, according to this shita of the Ravid, there is certainly no problem with the mashkon being used in our case. Why? Because in our case, they've already, when they make the agreement to work for the Balabayas, that's what the mashkon can be chal on. That's a halachically valid kinyan. When they, again, agree to start their work, therefore the mashkon can guarantee that, and it would be effective here. And again, the mashkon would be entirely related to whether or not they completed their work. The other shita in that Gemara, there's the shita of Ramban, who says that the reason for a mashkon serving to be ineffective in this case is although it's effective to be associated with the loan, it only serves as a lien. It doesn't actually serve as a physical object that was handed over. Meaning, even though, yes, it is associated with the loan, all you're really giving over is something intangible. You're giving over the, I will pay you if I don't pay you. But you're not actually handing over an object which you can do kiddushin with. So therefore, he says, it doesn't matter. The Ritva, the Rajba, seem to understand this slightly differently than some others, but the main point is to say, everybody agrees, therefore, that it's going to come out. Let me just jump down here. Okay, that if a specific legal acquisition, if a kinyan was made on the object itself, it would be effective as a mashkon. Meaning, Ramban says the only element that's lacking is that this is to be viewed as an object under these circumstances. Because the mashkon isn't being given over as an object, it's being given over as, again, some intangible guarantee that I'm going to pay you some money. So even though it works as an intangible guarantee, an intangible guarantee is not enough to make kiddushin. In our case, if there was a kinyan made on the object, though, in both cases, really, Some people, and the reason why I say this is because some people would be mechalek between Kiddushin and here, like we see in Tosfos and Kiddushin, and that's how they learn the Ramban. Other people say no, it's irrelevant of Kiddushin or anywhere else. The point is to say, everybody says, and again, explicitly, that Ramban would agree that in our case, if there was a kinyan on the object itself, it would certainly work as a mashkon. That's in fact the way Ramban and Ritva, in the name of Ramban, explain our Gemara. They say it's talking about a mashkon where you made a kinyan in the object. And therefore, since you made a kinyan in the object is now considered a halachically valid mashkon. Yes.
Do you need that for the Ramban?
You might not need that from the Ramban, depending on how you learn the Kiddushin element of it.
Meaning, the point is that...
that there is a shibud on this.
There is a mashkon, it's just not Mikudeshes.
Correct.
So then, here also, there is a mashkon, meaning it's valid, you own it. Such, you have a mashkon, so you can demand
That's why, again, to be Yotzei everybody, you just say you have a kinyan, and that's how the Ramban himself learns here. That's what the Rav says according to the Ramban here, based on there. So, there are some, now, Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz, by the way, basically offers this as an answer to the question of why we don't say mana inkan, mashkon inkan in our case. He gives this exact reason of the Ramban, and many other Rishonim as well. You can, again, if you want a list, come to me. There are some alternate approaches. Both of those approaches could work within Tosfos, where Tosfos would actually be viewing this as a halachic mashkon, and therefore he's asking Pshita, obviously in the case of a halachic mashkon, you'd be able to take the money, so what is this Gemara coming to tell us? There are a couple of other views. I would say there are three main other views, but they're kind of all overlapping. Okay, so alternate view number one, that's not a mashkon, is what I would call a super mashkon. Basically what it is, and this is based on Tosfos and Kiddushin and their language there, and is a slight modification of what we just said, is where you gave it over, says Tosfos, not as a mashkon, but specifically, here is money that you should hire other workers with. Okay? So that's what I would call it, a super mashkon. Meaning, it's not just that you're making a kinyan on the guf ha-mashkon.
Rabbi Chananel
maybe also, yeah. Based on the language, again, it's not that much different from what we said from the Ramban, but it is different that they're saying specifically it's no longer about a mashkon, it's here is a bank account, a credit card that you can use to hire new workers. So that's one modified position. That's, again, Tosfos, possibly Rabbeinu Chananel. The one important point on this is that the Yad David, which is Side Notes in Mefarshei Talmud, says that this would be automatic when you gave over the tools. It wouldn't need an explicit saying, which is what the Ritva actually says about a different teretz, but could apply here as well. Okay. The second modification is to say that enachanami halachically it's not a good mashkon, but since you're causing a loss here, we're going to consider it as one. Now, this really heads back to the crux of understanding the svar of why you're allowed to, again, be socher aleihem to such an extent. That's something that we see in Tosfos and Kiddushin as well, Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz here, to say that it's a special allowance, even though it's technically not a mashkon. It's almost like a gzera derabanan, maybe you could say, because you're going to cause a loss in this case.
We see that kind of behavior,
that's a better explanation,
I mean...
There's something else, right?
Right, I mean, yeah, we could. That would go back to Tosfos and Kiddushin.
Right.
But in terms of our sugya, yes, that's how they would understand our sugya. Okay, the final approach is that the kinyan of the object perhaps allows for withholding it in general. And that gets back to the other sugya that we learned, which we're not going to read inside. But basically, the Gemara there has a Mishnah/Brisa, but really it's a Mishnah, I believe, that if somebody accidentally gave a coin belonging to Hektish to a bathhouse owner, they've already been over Me'ilah. Rav says it's specifically a bathhouse because there's no kinyan on the tools there. But were it to be a case where there's a kinyan on the tools, you would only be over Me'ilah once the balabayas takes the tools of the worker. The Gemara then says, what? Literally, the next case is in the case of a tisporas, even in the case of someone who is a barber, it says still if you give over the money, it's considered Me'ilah. And it doesn't seem that you've taken the barber's scissors yet as the balabayas. And leaving the Gemara there, we jump right into a machlokas rishonim. Rabbeinu Tam, cited in Tosfos there, and many, many other sources suggest that based on this discussion, possibly all types of workers, possibly just the Kablan, are actually physically unable to retract after he gives them his tools. Okay, so if the worker gives the tools to the Balabayas, the worker cannot leave under any circumstances. We can hold a gun to his head and make him work, no matter how much money he wants to pay. Okay, that's seemingly the way it is. Not everyone understands it that way, by the way. The Ri, on the other hand, maintains that no, that's certainly not the case. Although the worker is still allowed to actually go back, you're allowed to hold the object that he has given you in order to make him work for you, in order to hire others, etc., etc. So the question becomes, now, let's bring it in for a second, because I see we're short on time. So, Tosfos might have been working with either of these opinions, and I'll give you a source for this, and then I'll refute it. Tosfos could be working according to the Ri, who says that you have every right to keep, again, the package, regardless of whether it's Davar Aved, not Davar Aved. As soon as you are Kone, this package, meaning the worker's tools, then you're allowed to use it, again, against them. That would work perfectly within Ri. That could also be why Tosfos asked Pshita, leaving aside the whole issue of Mashkon. Whether or not it's actually considered to be a Mashkon, that could be a reason. The Otzer Mefarshei HaTalmud cites a couple of Mefarshim in footnote 40 that say this about Rabbeinu Tam as well. And they say, in the case where the worker basically stuck out his tongue at the Balabai, says, oh, you think you can force me to work? I don't care. He says, then Rabbeinu Tam would agree that one method of coercing him would be to take all of his tools. You could read it that way from the Mordechai, which cited Rabbeinu Baruch, seems that this would not be the case. He specifically says it can't be working here. Okay, so it is a back and forth about that. I would tend to... I'm not going to say my own personal opinion here. Okay, now, based on the very likely assumption that this is referring to the tools of the worker, which, again, is a whole other discussion as to what it refers to in Rashi especially, but I don't know if we're going to get there in our last 3 minutes. We're on the last page already. I timed myself pretty well.
Awesome.
So, again, based on the very likely assumption that our Gemara here on Ayin Ches is talking about, Kibas Chavila is talking about the workers of, the tools of the worker, sorry, the Ramban, the Rajba, all note that this is, you know, the tools of the worker are entirely under the control of the Balabayas. And that therefore he has the right, and that would be the reason for our Gemara. The question would then come up as to, well, what about in cases where it's non-Davar HaAved, if the tools are really truly in the possession of the Balabayas, to what extent can he use it there? And as understood by the Magen Mishnah, in other cases of non-Davar HaAved, you'd only be allowed to use them to pay a regular market rate, not to pay anything extra. Again, you may also have to search. However, at the end of the day, they say that this could be the reason why in a case of Davar HaAved, that you can take 40 zuz, 50 zuz, or possibly even more. Which, again, goes back to probably what the discussion of this term means. Meaning, if they hold that you actually are in full possession of the worker's tools, stopping at 40 or 50 seems a little arbitrary. But again, that discussion could have been had with the Mashkon as well. The point is that many Rishonim will actually say that that's the rationale for this discussion here, in that you're holding their tools. We've got about another minute and a half. So, Rashi's opinion is hard to understand. It's unclear if he holds it as just anything that you have the right to take, similar to the logic that we saw earlier, either of Gzera, because he's causing you a loss. Mordechai understands Rashi is viewing this as a Mashkon and limits it specifically to the case of the worker's tools. The Shach disagrees, but that's a whole long discussion which we didn't really get into. Halacha Lamaisa, by the way, just to quote you some of the major poskim on this in our last minute, the Rama 333.1, Sma 333.2, and Shach 333.2 all follow Rabbeinu Tam that a Kabbalah cannot retract once the employer had taken their tools. For a Poel, the Raman, the Sma agree that the employer can withhold their tools, meaning, and not force them, but Shach disagrees, and he says that the employers have to return the tools in the case of a regular Poel. For Davar HaAved, Shulchan Aruch rules that without being in possession of the worker's tools, one has to pay double, which is based on the Beis Yosef, which he says no one disagrees, so that's simple. Sma agrees with that, the Shach doesn't comment. If you are in possession of the tools, Rama says it specifically has to be the tools, Shulchan Aruch says even if you have money of theirs, then Shulchan Aruch seems to make this unlimited based on the language of Shulchan Aruch. I would say that's what he holds. However, the Shach and the Sma disagree, and they say it would be based on what's normal under those circumstances, like the Yisan, the Ran, and Mukhi Yosef, and others. Go ahead.